Coming up on Path to Zero.
I think hydrogen is already happening. What's the really important question is, where will hydrogen play a part in the energy transition?
Welcome to Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low-carbon future. Your host is Tucker Perkins, engineer, entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, and clean energy industry veteran, who now serves as president and CEO of the Propane Education and Research Council. Now, here's Tucker.
Hello, friends. This episode of Path to Zero is all about hydrogen. You know, hydrogen is viewed by many to be the energy answer to climate change and the surest path to net zero carbon emissions. Supporters say it's the future of transportation and home heating. Many others, however, shake their heads because of hydrogen's expense or concerns around safety. We need an expert opinion to help us navigate this disagreement, so our guest in this episode of Path to Zero is just that, an energy expert who's going to help us dig into the future challenges and opportunities around hydrogen. John Armstrong is author of the book, The Future of Energy, Hydrogen, Hope or Hype. The book is very well written, and it's accessible to anyone interested in learning more about the future of hydrogen. John is an engineer whose career has spanned the extremes of the energy industry. He began his career building oil refineries before moving to work on renewable electricity generation. More recently, John has been leading the growth of decentralized energy and heating. John is a fellow of the Institute of Mechanical Engineers, a member of the Energy Institute, and has an MBA in global energy. And we're very pleased to have him join us from his home about 2 hours west of London in Bath, United Kingdom. It's great to talk to you, John, and welcome to Path to Zero.
Thanks for inviting me, Tucker. It's a pleasure to join you.
We really haven't talked much about hydrogen on this podcast, so I'm looking forward to you today. But even in the foreword of your book, you talk about that you yourself were a hydrogen skeptic. You know, as you began to research and then ultimately write the book, did your views change on hydrogen?
I think as a technology, I see hydrogen as something that's about moving energy around. So hydrogen in itself isn't a creation of energy. So I think it isn't as clear cut as saying, do I think hydrogen's going to happen or not? I think hydrogen is already happening. So what's the really important question is, where will hydrogen play a part in the energy transition, and which sectors will it have an impact on? At the moment, there's already 70 million tons of hydrogen manufactured in the world a year. So hydrogen isn't going away anytime soon. A huge amount of the population of the world are reliant on hydrogen that gets turned into ammonia for food. So I think when you say, do I think hydrogen's going to happen or not, I think it's what's more important is to start to think about the subtlety of where will hydrogen have the biggest impact.
John, so many of our listeners, you're one of their first experiences around hydrogen. So I know you talk about the different colors of hydrogen, but talk to us about maybe how hydrogen is made, why we have so many different colors. Give them a primer on hydrogen.
Yeah, Tucker. So today, globally, 70 million tons of hydrogen is made, and it's made through what's commonly called gray or black hydrogen, also brown hydrogen, actually, but we'll get into that in a minute. Actually, there's a huge amount of hydrogen made globally, and it actually accounts for 2.5% of global carbon dioxide emissions, which is a phenomenal number. Most of it's being made to make ammonia for fertilizer. So when we talk about hydrogen and carbon intensity, there's a lot of people have started using this color code, and personally I'm not a massive fan of the color code because I think it overcomplicates something where really we should just be using language like high carbon intensity and low carbon intensity or zero carbon. I think we should be talking about carbon rather than colors. But what we're talking about with the colors is how carbon intensive hydrogen is. So currently most hydrogen is made through something called steam reformation, where you throw high temperature steam at a molecule of hydrocarbon. So that could come from coal or lignite or methane gas or propane gas. And that effectively makes the carbon spin off as carbon dioxide. and leaves you behind with some hydrogen. And that is 95% of global hydrogen production is made that way. The other way typically is using some form of electrolysis. You'd have done that in high school when you put a cathode and an anode in a beaker of water and got hydrogen and oxygen gas to come off, albeit in quite small quantities. Typically, the green hydrogen methods use that, and that's using electricity from either solar or wind, typically. Or you could use hydro, of course, or nuclear, and that will be at the lower carbon end. Now, the other option with the higher carbon sources of hydrogen is that you do some form of carbon capture and storage. And actually, there's loads of experience of doing that kind of thing now in the oil and gas industry, where carbon dioxide is piped, loads of pipes actually across the US. The US is one of the larger transporters of carbon dioxide, and then pumped into the ground. So, but it is complex. And I think for hydrogen as a topic, I think this is a real problem for it, in that it's so hard to actually help people understand where it sits in the journey. I probably talked about manufacturing hydrogen there, Tucker. Apologies. It ends up quite a long answer, this, doesn't it, as a summary. But that where the real exciting prospect for hydrogen comes is that hydrogen in itself doesn't emit carbon dioxide when you burn it. And so actually, hydrogen as a fuel is super interesting. So you could use hydrogen. Potentially, there's a lot of push to heat homes. I'm not sure that's going to be the priority for use of hydrogen. That's my personal view. But actually, for something like heavy haulage or trucks, where really the weight of the batteries will far outweigh potentially the amount of energy that can be stored and things, and make it more difficult, hydrogen becomes a really interesting prospect, particularly around that energy density that you're looking for something like heavy haulage or running trains, or even potentially getting aeroplanes up off the ground.
Interesting. We'll talk about those segments. You are at least involved, I know, in a power station in Britain that's going to burn pure hydrogen. Talk to us about the viability and then perhaps the wisdom of making electricity by using hydrogen.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic, this, isn't it? I think it's really interesting. I think the thought of using hydrogen to make electricity, so when you think about the efficiencies you'll get, so maybe you might get, if you're lucky, I'm going to go with 60-70% efficiency, to then transmit electricity where you lose some more of that energy. That doesn't feel a fantastic use of hydrogen from green electricity to me. You probably should just try and move that green electricity around. Where though it does become super interesting is if you think about if there was a global trade in hydrogen to develop. So if all of a sudden those nations that are substantially more sunny, so particularly around the equator, could start generating hydrogen and then liquefy it and ship it around the world, or potentially those nations with a lot of hydrocarbons and a willingness to sequester the carbon deep underground for forever, so they could produce green hydrogen and then ship it around the world. So I think in the short term, generating electricity from hydrogen, I think really it's a proof of concept thing. In the longer term, if you could see large volumes of hydrogen moving around the world, that could become super interesting.
And do you generally think that the way we'll move hydrogen around the world is in fact by compressed and liquefied hydrogen, or will it be attached to a carrier much easier to transport, such as ammonia?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I love the chemistry around this. It's really taken me back actually to my school days, and I found it absolutely fascinating looking at all the various different options here. So hydrogen as a gas really isn't in a gas at room temperature, really, and room and atmospheric pressure, there's very, very, very low energy intensity. So you've got to do something with it. Actually, interestingly, similar to methane and propane now, where typically with propane you compress, and methane you either liquefy or compress, depending on your application. With hydrogen, I think realistically, liquid hydrogen is an option. It's not as energy dense as methane, but then there's all these various other options of carrier compounds. So I've seen borane, you can move it effectively in ammonia. I've done a little bit of work with ammonia. Ammonia is tough stuff to deal with. It's explosive and toxic. So it can be pretty challenging to move ammonia in large quantities around. That said, if you look at, again, the States has plenty of track record with moving ammonia around safely and storing it, so particularly in liquid form. So I think for me, the jury's very much out as to which of those technologies will win, and I think, or which of those technologies will succeed. And I think this is the really interesting thing about hydrogen, is nobody knows. When you think about how developed hydrocarbon supply chains are, it's really interesting, isn't it? Is that those little marginal price changes in the hydrocarbon supply chain market, people will invest. Whereas with hydrogen, you really don't know yet where the best place to put money is in that supply chain. And it's really easy to end up with stranded assets.
Yes. Yes. It's, certainly we are in the, as you said, even though we've been around a long time with hydrogen, we're in the infancy. I will tell you, I'm involved in a really fascinating project in Chile, where they're in the south, where, as you say, there's abundant sunshine, but not much else in the way of transportation or logistics or people. So there we take the sun and make hydrogen with excess electricity. But then there they store that into the propane, making renewable propane, where they can easily transport it and move it to the north where people live. So we're watching that project too, but early on it seems to be quite successful. Talk to us about the segments. You know, there, and when the conversation turns to hydrogen, people generally talk about this breadth of sectors, but as you've already alluded to, you may see less value often in power generation, certainly less value in home heat. Where are the sectors that you see hydrogen being very applicable in the energy transformation?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a hierarchy here of where you can't do it, where it's super carbon intensive and you can't do it any other way. And so at the moment, fertilizer production is super carbon intensive and you can't do it any other way. And so actually I see that as a real target area. You've then got those sorts of processes where that just need a lot of heat. So with the best will, you're not going to be able to do it with biomass or I'm trying to think of your other alternatives, electricity. And particularly I'm thinking things there like steel making, certain parts of the steel making process, some of the other chemical reactions that need to be done to make different chemicals and things. And so actually, if you can look at, if you go in that sort of hierarchy, where I've got absolutely no alternative, that's where that green hydrogen needs to head first. And then as you work down, you've got things like heavy haulage, where really getting battery powered heavy haulage is a long way off. Aviation, getting aeroplanes up out with batteries. I know there's some amazing work from the likes of Ampere and people like that, getting aeroplanes up off the ground. But realistically, we're not going to be having battery powered A380s flying between New York and London anytime soon. So actually it's those kind of applications where hydrogen, and also I think Tucker, in the previous question you mentioned all those different potential carriers for hydrogen, are super interesting. So and then yeah, you get further down that hierarchy and there's a lot of discussion around home heating and there's some really good reasons why hydrogen's good for home heating. And then in other places, it might not be so good. And often that can be slightly geographical, actually, depending on whether electricity can be easily provided. There are alternatives like heat pumps and things where if there's a ready supply of electricity and an adequate grid connection, heat pumps might make a bit more sense. And I think this is the world we're coming into now of much more interdependency and choices than perhaps we've been used to with hydrocarbons.
What are the drawbacks? What are the concerns around using hydrogen?
I think as with anything, it's different, and it has different properties and different behaviors, and whether we love them or not, because clearly hydrocarbons come with their problems. We've had 100 years of getting used to them, So hydrogen's new. It does behave differently. It's got a very small molecule size, so those molecules can be slightly harder to keep in the pipe. It also burns differently, so it burns really hot, which can produce a lot of oxides of nitrogen, different sort of local pollutants. So it is a different fuel. So in terms of concerns, I'm an engineer myself. I have every faith that engineers will find ways to keep hydrogen safe. But what's really important is that the amount of thinking and time and things are spent to finding ways to do that. And I think you hit on a really important point there, Tucker, is that with this kind of technology, with any kind of new technology, the buy-in of the general public is super important, especially if you want to put it into their houses or their cars or something that's really close to them or build something near them. And it's really important for hydrogen to communicate well the various bits of people who are trying to develop hydrogen, to really communicate well about those kind of safety aspects. And similarly, actually, the carbon intensity. I think confusing people around carbon doesn't help either. I think it's really important to really important to help people understand what's happening.
Interesting, yes. And I know for me, I often think about, as a person who was involved with natural gas and compressed natural gas and the higher pressures compared to propane, we then go another couple episodes further, I guess hydrogen can be compressed upwards to about 10,000 PSI, I guess, to be useful in transportation. Is that about right?
Yeah, that feels about right. I think you'd probably see, before you go into those pressures, I'd be expecting to see more liquefaction, actually. I know particularly in trucks, liquid natural gas has been successfully shown to work in trucks, and there's a number of people with liquid natural gas engines. So actually, you might see some more. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a bit more liquefaction around transport. It really gets the energy densities up then.
And as you begin to think about all of the energy required to compress or liquefy and keep it liquefied, I mean, even for LNG, with which I'm pretty familiar, does that change the environmental benefit, or is that all baked into the numbers?
I think that's a really relevant point. And I think the key here is there's a bit of an assumption in the world of hydrogen that it's all green or it'll all get green. And I think actually that end to end, from cradle to grave, or cradle to however you want, from production to combustion or to use, that end to end carbon intensity and cost case is really important. There can't be an assumption that all hydrogen comes with a green label on it. That is going to be a challenge. And I think that's often when you hear about these sort of applications, you hear people saying, oh, it's green hydrogen, so it doesn't matter if I use a load of it to compress it. But that surely has to impact the economics of using it.
But it is interesting that you are consistently making the case that it doesn't all need to be green, that other forms of hydrogen can be equally beneficial to the environment. It's not just about green hydrogen, which I really not explored that much, but that's what you're saying, right?
Well, yeah, and I think the key is what you do with that carbon. So the other option is what the blue hydrogen. Sorry, I didn't really, without going into the colors in a massive layer of depth, the idea of blue hydrogen is that you use your steam reformation like you do now. It's a very well-developed and efficient process. But you capture that carbon dioxide and shove it underground into some form of long-term storage. And that's one of the options that's often discussed. But again, that comes with a cost, because there's a cost to capturing that carbon. There's an energy use to capturing that carbon and then pumping it under pressure underground to get yourself to green. So I think it's really important when the end-to-end use of hydrogen as a fuel is considered, to think about the trade-off between energy use, primary energy use, and what actually gets to be consumed at the end. And again, we talked about this being really in its infancy. I don't think people really know that yet. And the big game changer is if somebody who could produce very, very cheaply, very large volumes of green hydrogen, that would be completely game-changing.
John, we're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back to talk more about the future of hydrogen.
Zero is a big number. Getting close to a zero emissions future starts with using the broadest mix of clean, low-carbon energy sources. You might be surprised to know that propane produces a lot of energy for thousands of purposes and millions of people with virtually zero particulate matter, zero impact to the ozone, zero toxicity, and zero potential for storage-related contamination. It's low NOx and low CO2 to boot. Path to Zero is sponsored by Propane. Energy for everyone. Learn more at propane.com. Maybe I'll win.
Welcome back. Our guest is John Armstrong, and we're talking about hydrogen, hope or hype. I'm not sure how topical you are on this, but I know IRENA, so that's the International Renewable Energy Agency, came out with a pretty scathing statement around hydrogen, I thought, that they talked about the indiscriminate use of hydrogen could slow the energy transition. So the indiscriminate use of hydrogen could slow the energy transition. And they went on to talk about how, you know, hydrogen is not necessarily a solution to all sectors decarbonizing. But I don't know if you're familiar with that. And then actually I noticed this morning Nature picked up kind of a similar thought. So some of the first writings I've seen that begin to talk about, for example, home heat through hydrogen would be a waste of energy, I think, really, according to IRENA and Nature. What have you followed that dialogue, and do you have any opinions on that?
Yeah, I think I have a little, I agree with the principle is that hydrogen is right for its place. Like, so hydrogen will be part of the energy transition in some form. And I think the risk is that because this hydrogen is so big and it needs such big investment, that there's an idea that actually, don't worry, we don't need to transition yet because hydrogen is going to come along and save us. And I think that's where that concern comes, I think, from the bodies like IRENA, is that you've got this this sort of magic technology that's going to come in 10 years, so we don't need to worry. We'll stop people pushing on a transition now, particularly for some of those sectors that are either on the margins or not really applicable. But it's really hard, isn't it? Because you don't know the carbon intensity or the cost of hydrogen in the future. So it's very, very difficult to make a call now whether on the best thing for a transport system is to convert all trains to hydrogen. Well, how could you possibly price a project like that today? Because you just have no idea what the cost basis for that's going to be. Yes. So yeah, I do, and I do recognise I think anything that hydrogen shouldn't be there, shouldn't slow transition, particularly in those sectors where the technology already exists to achieve it.
Yes. Yes. It's interesting to me. And I think, you know, we love to quote Voltaire on this podcast that, you know, perfect is the enemy of good. And it does look like in this environmental discussion, there are people who always look for the next solution that's out there and forget that we really need to decarbonize now. And so it is interesting to me that you paint the picture that certainly hydrogen is out there and is capable of being a contributor now, and we don't need to wait for some of this.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of uses of hydrogen that are using it today that could benefit from decarbonization. So you could really push on developing that green hydrogen just to feed where it's used today and to support the sectors that you know really currently there isn't a credible technology pathway other than hydrogen. So I think what's really important in all these discussions is to not polarize and make people wrong. I actually think there's such a challenge ahead of us and there's such a lot to do that actually everybody can to some degree be right. I don't think it And I think, unfortunately, one of the issues in the energy debate is that often the debate is polarizing. So absolutely hydrogen's the answer, electrification's the answer, or I'm trying to think what else I've seen. This is bad, this is good, this is green, this is not green. And actually the answer lies somewhere in the middle, and it's far more nuanced than that. And I think actually hydrogen for heating for some areas could be absolutely spot on. It could be the perfect technology. If you've got a city or a town near somewhere where you need to create a lot of hydrogen, probably using some of it for local heating will make a lot of sense. If you're a long way from there, from somewhere where there's a lot of hydrogen, it might not, and electrification might be the right answer. So it's not, I think it's more nuanced, and I think that's a real challenge for the energy sector that typically is reported in the media as in a quite polarized way, to get the debate into this middle ground.
Yeah, I think few people really realize how complicated the existing business is, much less the solutions. John, I rarely talk to someone who has written a book or even a series of books as you have that didn't learn something that they didn't mean to learn along the way. When you wrote The Future of Energy, Hydrogen, Hope, or Hype, did anything come out to you that you didn't really expect to learn at the beginning of the idea?
I put it together because I was getting a bit baffled by particularly the colors and this technology that was sort of touted as the answer, but I couldn't quite see through it. And so I just learned a huge amount. I think the big learning for me, I have to say, was just how much hydrogen is already produced globally and just how many people rely on that hydrogen to feed themselves. And I think that was just the big learning for me, actually, was that generation of ammonia from hydrogen using steam reformation is already a cornerstone of really world growth. And it's hugely important.
Mm-hmm. You said that hydrogen is such a fast-changing field that even once you wrote the book, it would require a regular update. Are you already thinking
absolutely
about an update?
Yeah, I am actually. I'm actually currently in the process of I do another book on which is my main one really, which is on the future of energy in general, and try and share some thoughts sort of in this middle ground I'm talking about of actually, let's not polarize, where are we going? And I did one in 2020, one in 2021. This year has completely got away from me. So I'm hoping in January to get a 2023 version out. And that talks a lot more about hydrogen and the role and the potential roles for hydrogen and why this topic that's really come from nowhere in the last 24 months is so important for people to engage with and understand. Whether they agree or not is a different question, but so that's due out shortly, hopefully.
Excellent. Okay, well let's have some fun. We love to have a fun part of the show where we give you a magic wand, get you to use that wand for one thing that you would use to make the biggest difference for climate change over the next 1 year. So one wish, one wand, 1 year. How would you use that magic wand?
So I think personally, I think the role of small modular nuclear reactors actually is a massive area of growth. And I think actually that magic wand to really grow small modular nuclear reactors. And then I'm going to have two goes with it, if that's all right. I'll have another wave. And then there is so much potential for offshore wind globally. And the one thing you know, and this is why I say SMRs and offshore wind, the one thing you know in whichever energy future you go into, whether it's hydrogen or electrification, they both need a lot of electricity. And so absolutely, I would wave that and just say, actually, go big in electricity, because absolutely, whichever way this thing goes, it'll end up needing a lot more than there is now.
Now, you're in Europe, you live in Bath, but certainly, you know, you're got a front row seat to kind of the unfolding energy crisis through most of Europe. Yet you just picked two technologies that I would say, at least today, are relatively expensive, offshore wind and hydrogen, not SMRs. But are you concerned about ultimately the cost to market for either one of those technologies, or do you believe that over time they'll come down to make them affordable with other energy choices?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. I was reading over the weekend about the costs on particularly offshore and onshore wind. Some of those renewable costs now are coming in less per kilowatt than building a coal power station. So actually, I think I have actually a lot of hope that the direction of travel for those technologies, it's been phenomenal that the reduction in costs for offshore wind and solar in the last decade have been absolutely incredible. And I think that's the bit that gives me hope that with that cost reduction, there is real hope for some change. And I also think those applications, I don't think people need to necessarily be winners and losers. I think there is also going to be a need for liquid fuels, be they derived from hydrogen, to keep things like aeroplanes in the sky for a little while yet. And so I actually think there's opportunities within the energy transition, and particularly that reducing cost in the renewable side really helps with that.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of interest ourselves in e-fuels now. We'll see how that develops, but certainly they seem to be likely enough to be not only created but economically delivered. So we see a lot of promise in e-fuels, I think.
Yeah, it's a super interesting sector, isn't it? Because it helps you deliver that carbon benefit you're looking for, whilst actually really changing that supply chain. And especially some of the fuels from waste are super interesting as well. Like I think if you can start to use waste to make jet fuel, that's a really interesting opportunity. What I think we do need to be careful of, though, is when we talk about these technologies, often they're presented as if the answer's a couple of years away. In terms of the scale and the volumes required to decarbonize some of the sectors that need decarbonizing, it is a massive challenge, and that the investment and the volume is huge.
Yeah, truth has been spoken there for sure. Anything else you're working on that you'd love to share with our listeners?
No, just that. That's my current little project on the energy transition is to get the next version of the book out and share that with people. And I've been super grateful with all of these books that people from all over the world have reached out for a conversation. And I talk to people on LinkedIn, and they come up with ideas and suggestions. And I've got some regular correspondence on various topics. And I learned so much, because everyone's worldview on this is different. And particularly readers from the States have been really interesting in terms of some of their viewpoints. And actually, there's a lot of hope in there as well. So really, that for me, that's the project. I love the debate. I genuinely do it because I enjoy the discussion. And I enjoy meeting people and learning about other perspectives. And that's the whole point of communicating well about the energy transition for me, is that we come in the middle and we meet and we learn and we understand and we learn from each other and we make it happen.
Yes, yes. John, we don't get a lot of guests living in Great Britain right now, although we get a lot of news about, you know, the effects of the war in Ukraine and kind of how Europe will fare. What's your view? How will England survive this winter?
Yeah, I think the news is actually fairly positive. It's fairly mild. I think I think for Europe it is challenging, and I think particularly pulling in LNG from around the world has helped. I think it will push on the energy transition. Actually, I think people now are realizing that energy really does have a cost, but it does have an impact economically, and I think. As almost going full circle into our original conversation, Tucker, you've got this change, haven't you, where the true length of some of these supply chains and the impact on things happening really starts to make you think about this trilemma between carbon, cost, and resilience. And I think actually the recent issues really highlight as we think about the energy transition, absolutely getting that carbon down is super important, and it needs to deliver at a cost that people can afford, whilst you're making sure that you're not exposing yourself to too much supply chain risk. And I think that trilemma is really important, and it's really important to think about that in the context of hydrogen or renewables or electrification, that there needs to be a resilience in the system, because the reality is people are living on the end of these systems in houses that need to be heated.
Right. Well said. Well said. Well, thank you. We love to thank our guests on Path to Zero by planting a tree in their name. Now, normally it's a national forest in the U.S., but clearly you're not here. You're in the U.K., but boy, I can think of some beautiful woods near Bath, Heart of England Forest, maybe the Manor Woods Valley over by Bristol. But curious if you have a particular spot in mind where we could plant a tree in your honor.
Well, I thought about this. I did. I looked at it, and I thought locally, and I looked, and then I thought, actually, the one place I would love to know a tree had been planted was in the Amazon. So if you can pull that off, that would be amazing. I don't know how a tree gets planted in the Amazon, but I was looking at it thinking, actually, that's the one place in the world where we need to be planting trees and regrowing it.
Well, that's a great use, and maybe the political winds shifted now, so maybe there'll be a few trees, less trees cut in the Amazon as we think about it. But we'll be glad to try to add one there in your name, and to thank you for being on the guest. You have on the podcast. You have been a terrific guest, and thanks again for spending time with us today on Path to Zero.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Tucker. I've really enjoyed talking with you.
That wraps up this episode of Path to Zero. Remember, we'll always welcome your input and guest suggestions. Just send us an email to path2zero@propane.com. That's path, the word two, the word zero, at propane.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on Path to Zero.
Thank you for listening to Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to path2zero@propane.com.